This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think it's probably my favourite booking of all time was when you chased Jack Grealish from right back all the way in his own half and then took him down. Did I see you having a wee cheeky smile to yourself after it?
Look, I think it was I was just getting a bit fed up at that stage of the game. He just came on, he was nice and fresh, and normally when the fresh wingers come on, that's you're a bit tired, so I just need to hit him here because I'm getting fed up with him trying to take the mick out of me. So gave him a wee hit. Thankfully John McGinn had been giving me some tips. Aye. Said if he comes on, you need to be getting nibbling in his ear, but don't be critical, be complimentary. So the full time he was on, I was telling him how good looking he was and I loved his calves and asking him how he got his hair to look like that. If you tell him he's a I don't know what's appropriate here, but if you tell him he's hopeless or kick him really, really hard, Aye. He gets up and gets it back at you. So maybe that was the advantage against Jack Grealish the other night.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for the latest My Old Man Said podcast, which finds us knee-deep in the Euros, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Not too bad. Mr. Budd, I see pictures of you frolicking around in sunflowers this week. What have you been up to?
I've been getting all cultural this week, David. I went knee deep, as you so nicely put it, in the Van Gogh immersive experience at the Hippodrome, which was very good.
Did you come out with both your ears? Is it that immersive, or
it's a full experience, Philip?
The Hippodrome in Birmingham, which should be giving me a free ticket after that plug, but never mind. We soldier on.
It's well worth a look. To be fair, it's good. The music's great, and the art speaks for itself.
Yeah, you can get a cheap price deduction, can't you? Google around. Or if people are going, just email me or something. I don't know.
You can get it. It's about 12 quid with the offer.
Yeah. Mr. Shaw, Loki is out. There's a new Marvel show out. So how is your Disney share doing? Or your fraction of a Disney share? Has it gone up?
No, surprisingly, despite Loki being pretty good, it's went down. So I don't know what's going on there.
Well, luckily, we have a new show sponsor. As we go into the new season, I've been thinking, how can we have sponsors that are actually useful? Because I'm not into the shaving the balls humiliation sponsors. I'm not really into like betting sponsors. So I was looking for something that could help empower listeners, and in this case, potentially help them with their personal wealth long term. So this episode is brought to you by Free Trade, which is a commission-free investing app that makes the buying of shares so much more simpler. And the big thing is commission-free, because a lot of these apps and companies like charge you £12 a trade, while Free Trade you can actually just open up with £2, and then that gives you access to all the main, you know, big-hitting shares. And American shares you can actually buy fractions off, like Phil Shaw does. He buys minuscule fractions of Disney shares. What else have you got?
Well, I had AMC, but let's just say I sold it at the wrong time.
AMC is the American cinema chain. I think it actually owns the Odeon in the UK as well. So I was thinking, if I want to have a sponsor of this show, then I want to have something that I actually use and actually believe in. So that's why I reached out to Free Trade, and they have obliged with an offer where when you sign up, all you have to do is actually invest, start investing from £2, and you'll get a free share from the value of anywhere from £3 to £200. Could be Apple, it could be AMC, could be Twitter, could even be something like Greg's. When I signed up, I think my share was worth £6, I think. But it's kind of a random potluck. And so far, 700,000 people actually use Free Trade at the moment. So it's worth checking out. And you can do so to get your free share on us by going to freetrade.io/moms, M-O-M-S. And remember, as with all investments, your capital is at risk. The value of your portfolio can go down as well as up, and you may get back less than what you invest. And other charges may apply. For example, if you set up an ISA with them. Also, if you're a Myomancer patron, I think we'll be setting up a little Investo Club.
Oh.
In Match Club.
Disruptive.
Because we've got all people from different walks of life, different industries, so we can have a little bit of a hive mind and discuss potential opportunities.
It's like a mom's think tank.
Yeah, on shares and investments. So another level there of intrigue. So this is the new direction, and thank you very much to Free Trade for getting on board. So check it out. The link will also be in the social media as well. Right, let's get back to the football. The main part of the show, we will discuss the Euros, focus on England, obviously, with the Villa connection, England versus Scotland as well. Throw in a bit of McGinn there. But Aston Villa has suddenly shook up into life. Give me a better word.
They've ignited.
Yeah, Aston Villa have ignited into action. We thought, you know, we'd be sitting around twiddling our thumbs waiting for the Euros to finish before the old transfer window started to explode. We'll do the Villa news and we'll do the 3 points before getting into the Euros. First up, though, the Villa news. We thought we'd be waiting to the end of the Euros for the transfer window to truly ignite, but I think the hint was there when Smith said he was excited about potential signings. Like, this is before the end of the season, wasn't it? Or maybe it's the post-match
It was just after Chelsea, yeah.
So obviously everything was set up, and it wasn't as if they were going to wait around to see what happens at the Euros. I think they had their list, and they were ready to rock and roll. Buendia came in. We haven't really spoken to him about him too much yet, but we'll save that for another day. And then out of left field, Mr. Ashley Young has returned after a decade or so absence.
What a decade to leave and come back, eh?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
He knows. There's a man who knows exactly what he's doing.
Ashley with his crystal ball.
Yeah. You see, this is it. I can only compare it to, you know, it's like an ex-girlfriend. It's like you get a bit down in your luck and they leave and they go on to have the best life in the world. And just when you pick yourself back together, you know, the girlfriend comes back. But that's just the emotional side of things. The actual...
Well, I mean, the girlfriend comes back, but is she still super attractive? Is she still beautiful? Is she rich?
Ashley Young looks no different, does he?
Has she developed new talents?
Can she still whip a ball then? Yeah.
He's back.
I mean, we won't linger too much on him at this stage, but we've spoken a couple of times over the last season about, in terms of getting people in, just something more on the bench that's got experience to get a wily old head just for a season or two, just in the moment while we're building a squad, just to have somebody to bring on that he has a history of making things happen. You know, bringing on Ramsey and bringing on Keenan Davis, we know in that game, as a supporter, you're just thinking, well, whatever the result is at the time, it's probably going to be the end result. But Ashley Young, unexpectedly, is that kind of player. He kind of fits the bill. And he will be 36 when the season starts. But, you know, you've just got to look at the Euros, haven't you? Seb Larsson, 37, still rocking and rolling.
Zlatan would have been playing if he hadn't got injured.
Yeah, Ronaldo still rocking and rolling. Pepe, fucking 38, still rocking and rolling.
I think it's a savvy move. I mean, there's a few people who, you know, I've seen online who are kind of a bit, what's the point? I'm like, well, we aren't getting the 2010 Ashley Young of that O'Neill era. We're not buying that player. It's a different vibe, this one. You're getting an experienced player that you need. You know, the accumulative age that you've lost from your squad of Heaton, Elmo and Taylor is probably the best part of 100 years. So you do need someone, you know, just to give you that steady.
You need somebody who's 200 years.
Yeah, you've got to get that average age up a little bit more. But it's a savvy move. I think he'll be good for bringing players along. Apparently, he's a really good trainer. He's in really good physical shape. I think he can actually bring something to the team, potentially the squad. I don't think he's going to come I don't think he's coming necessarily knowing he's going to be a starter, but I think he will feature.
If you listen to his interview, he's coming to start.
He's confident.
And, you know, the main thing is, I mean, people are saying, oh, you know, you fill in at both, you know, cover
for Taylor. Genuine utility player, he can play anywhere.
People are saying cover for Taylor and Target. I think the main thing here is Trezeguet, covering for Trezeguet.
Yeah.
He probably covers three or four positions for me.
But I think in terms of where's he going to start first, I think Trezeguet position is up for grabs because, as we keep saying, none of those boys are bang on 100% putting in shifts every week. So there is opportunity there for Young if he is fit. And, you know, he's been playing under Conte and he's just won a Serie A
title.
Title. And when you look at, I've done an article on it. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I think when he started at United after he came from Villa, the first, let's say, eight seasons, he was averaging, I don't know, about 22 games a season, league games I'm talking about.
Isn't amazing?
That would be considered his prime. But in the last three seasons, he's been averaging for Inter and Manchester United, he's been averaging over 30. So,
He's in good shape.
It's not as if he's been put out to pasture. He's actually been playing more games than he ever has. So that for me was a massive plus. And, you know, as we've seen from the Euros, the old boys still got a lot to offer. I mean, you know, I was watching Sweden the other day and Larsson, 37, was rock and rolling throughout the game on the right-hand side for Sweden. Yeah. So when I saw that, that gave me a bit more. I thought, yeah, this actually is a good buy.
And don't forget, he's got set-piece delivery as well. So if he's on the pitch, the first corner a free kick comes in, I mean, your eyes will be glued to the screen, or if you're in the crowd, you'll be watching that. This could actually be dangerous. I mean, it's not going to float over everybody's head.
No, so, I mean, there's a few sour pusses out there in the Villa ranks that still can't forgive him for moving to Manchester United. But hey-ho, you know, he as we've said, he's dodged a bullet with the 10 years that he's managed to get out.
And he gave us some very good service.
Yeah, no, very good. I mean, he's been one of our best players over the last 20 years, easily.
Yep.
He was a major part of the Martin O'Neill revolution when it looked like it was going somewhere.
Yeah. And my final point on Young is, I know Smith's mentioned this a few times with the recruitment last season compared to the year before, in that Young, he knows the area, he knows the club, he knows the league. So it's a very low risk signing, this one.
Yeah.
You can just bring him in and he'll do his thing, and he'll, you know, it might take a little while to kind of, you know, to be sort of like, to act like that senior pro, but he'll set standards that maybe other players weren't good at.
Point number two, let's move on. In terms of outs, Engels is out. I mean, how much should we pay for him?
It's about €8 million, I think.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get anywhere near that.
You're going to get maybe off, two, three back.
He's going off to Royal Antwerp. This is one of those where I was quite happy with him in the ranks of our, you know, four centre backs, but I think it's his personal situation from his point of view where he wants to play games and
he's barely kicked a ball, has he, for about 18 months?
You know, he's got a young family, maybe he wants to move back for that purpose as well, but mainly if you're not actually playing, then you need to really do something. And I think they sat down there and thought, right, well, you know, suddenly we've got an England international at centre-back. We've got another one who'll probably be in the World Cup squad. And then Courtney House, who has never let us down every time he's been on the pitch. So it's not easy for Engels to actually chart a path at Villa. Right, fixtures for the new season have come out. I haven't even bothered looking at them. it was like something like, they're going to get changed around for TV. I know we play Watford first game and finish with Manchester City, but I just thought I'm just going to stick with the Euros and then get into Villa mode properly later on. Anything stand out for you guys? You've obviously looked at them more than me.
Not a bad start, you know. Watford away, Newcastle home, Brentford home, not a bad start. And then September, October looks much tougher. My first port of call is always, we're playing on Boxing Day, Chelsea at home, so we've got a festive game at home. Not a bad end to the season. And February and March, where we're traditionally bollocks, doesn't look too bad on the face of it.
Yeah, I mean, you think, well, you know, at least you want to get a reasonably kind start to the season to get some momentum going. But you look at last season, you know, we beat Liverpool in the first four games, 7-2.
And then lost to newly promoted Leeds.
There's another philosophy where you don't actually mind playing the big boys earlier on because everybody's getting to grips with the situation. So it's always, you can get some wacky and weird results as we got against Liverpool. So there's two sides to the coin, but I think that we've got a kind of nice mix to start off with, really.
Yeah, agreed.
Last piece in, well, Lansbury's off to Luton. Not that he's a Villa player, but we'll just thought we'd throw that one in. What happened at Bristol?
He's living the Lansbury life now, and he only lasted 6 months.
Yeah, what happened to Bristol? Nigel Pearson came in.
Ah, right.
Came over.
He's just not having him, is he?
Yeah, there's no way. The first thing Pearson would do is get rid of any chaff, and that's just there you go. Finally, Douglas Luiz is set to travel to Tokyo for the Olympics, which Brazil, I mean, most of these Olympic teams always take some, you know, like under 23 type age range.
Yeah.
So that, depending on how deep Brazil go, and you'd expect Brazil to do pretty well in the Olympics, could mean he might not be around for the start of the season, or won't get much of, because he's away at the moment with the Brazilian international squad, Copa America, not that he's seen much action, but he'd have had one hell of a long season. So I'm sure he's going to need a break
at some point, isn't he?
He'll have a week or two off there. I don't think he's seen his family for yonks, has he?
Well over a year, yeah.
But he might not be around immediately at the start of the season, so we'll see what happens there. Right, 3 points. First of all, it's quite a wacky one. Fake name registration in the Bundesliga. I don't know how you get away with this. I always remember Lincoln City having a game, and a player had been booked earlier on, and the referee, this is in the days where the referee would just ask you for your name. And this Lincoln City player gave the name of another player in the Lincoln team just to escape the red card. So, you know, these kind of name-changing shenanigans have been going on. But here, a Stuttgart player, Silas Wamingatuka. Is that his real name, or is that his false name?
No, that was his false name.
You tell the story.
Yeah, so he was one of Stuttgart's best performers in the season just gone, Silas Wamingatuka. He was revealed to be playing under a false name and with the wrong date of birth. And it turned out that it was down to his agent. So the agent had registered him with that false name and the date of birth wrong, basically to break the links with the club that he sort of got him from. So this all happened when he was 19, and it's been kept secret ever since. So what happened then was Stuttgart, the player was basically under stress.
So this is a Congolese club that he got him from?
So the players, obviously, it's almost like a blackmail situation. This agent continues to have like a hold over him because he's keeping this secret. So Stuttgart and the director of sport, Thomas Hitzlsperger, ex-villain, of course, confided in the player, and they came to the conclusion that the best thing to do would be to reveal the truth and just get it all out in the open there, and then just deal with whatever happens. So that happened, and
which has obviously happened in Hitzlsperger's life as well.
Yeah, and what's happened since is the player has been fined 30,000 and been suspended for 3 months, but that seems to be quite a light sentence, you know, taking into account the special circumstances of the case. So all's well that ends well, he can move forward into the new season without that hanging over him.
So that's just one last question. What is his real name?
Well, his real name now is Silas Katumpa Mavumpa.
No wonder he changed his name.
That's a great name.
Well, I mean, he's a good player. So
imagine
getting
that on the back of your shirt.
It's got a bounce to it, hasn't it, when you pronounce it? Right, well, at least Mavumpa is outed now. He's living his true best life. Also in Germany, point number two. There's a bit of a kerfuffle over the LGBT rainbow. UEFA have launched an investigation due to Manuel Neuer's rainbow captain armband during the Euros. Of course, this is Pride Month, so no big deal, you would think. Apparently, UEFA considered it a political sign during a game, which is prohibited according to their rules. I think that's somebody's flagged it up who didn't like it, maybe. That's roughly translated. And the German Football Federation potentially was going to face a fine until UEFA finally saw sense. Meanwhile, the Munich City Council wants the Allianz Arena, home of Bayern Munich, they want that to light up to the colours of the rainbow when Germany face Hungary. Hungary's government recently passed legislation banning schools from discussing LGBT issues, and gay marriage is still not legal in the country. So I don't know what the outcome of that one is yet, but, you know, this is not... The word political, keep politics out of football, only comes up when somebody's not happy with whatever the thing is. But speaking of Hungary, I remember being in Budapest 15 years ago, and there was a pride parade coming through the streets. I just came out of a cafe with the person I was there with, and there was all these old women lined up, giving the floats... with you know, people dancing on them, just giving them the finger, just standing there holding up the finger to them. So Hungary is obviously in a situation where certain factions aren't too big on the LGBT issues, and I think Germany should definitely do that and not wait to you know, hear what UEFA have got to say about it, basically.
Yeah.
Point number three, Norwich are forced to drop a new front-of-shirt sponsor, BK8, after only 3 days due to historical promotion via soft porn, or as one journalist put it, sexualized marketing. Eight is a lucky number in China. Remember W88?
Ah, yes. Weighty eight.
Mm-hmm.
And gambling is also illegal.
Norwich, they announced the mutual termination of the partnership with BK8. They took on feedback from the supporters and partners, blah, blah, but maybe this was before the Buendia money came in, so they needed to get money from somewhere. So they said, on this occasion, we had made an error of judgment. Our standards were not at the levels we demand of a football club. We can now only apologise to our supporters and former players, Grant Holt and Darren Eady. Grant Holt, of course, of Aston Villa, who the BK8 promotional launched.
Sorry, no, not Grant Holt of Aston Villa. Grant Holt of Norwich.
Oh yeah, well,
we borrowed him.
And Wigan. Wait,
what was he? Was it? Did they dress him up as a dildo or something?
Maybe more use. What they did was they basically dumped it, and now they're looking for a new front of shirt sponsor there that fits more with their club ethos. But there's another twist in the tale of the BK8 story, because, of course, the only brand ambassador you can find for BK8 at the minute is a Mr. John Terry, who still...
of course.
Emblazons their website and wears the T-shirt at times.
Has he been involved in any soft porn with them?
I don't know.
Hasn't come out yet.
John Terry and Grant Holt in soft porn advert for BK8. I need to see this. Where is it? All right, before we move on, I just want to say a big, big, big thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much for supporting us through these summer months. Although, bad news, people, it's the longest day this weekend. Just mental. Gone. So we're heading to winter again. Woohoo! thank you very much to the latest My Old Man Said patrons who have signed up over the last couple of weeks. Max Hastinger, Ryan Kelford, Michael Callahan, Matt Smith, Bitplav Gutam, I hope I pronounced that right. And also a big thank you to Paul Sylvester for signing up as an annual My Old Man Said patron. If you sign up as an annual patron, you save around 15%, which is 2 months free. And you get access to monthly extra podcasts. We've just done a four-part underrated or overrated of the whole Aston Villa squad for the last season, with new podcasts to come, Mad Few Sessions, and also there'll be a few things since it is the 10th anniversary of My Old Man Said this season. So look out for those, but also you get access to Match Club. But please do go to the My Old Man Said Patreon and click on the Patreon option on the menu bar and join us there and get ready for the new season.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right then, well, finally, let's talk about the Euros, shall we? Since that's the main gig in town.
Let's.
You.
What's that?
Yeah.
Was that
just
you?
Yes, I was just helping us. I was just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was just trying to like liven it up because you two aren't very happy about it at the moment.
Oh, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I've always been a Holland fan. I don't know what you're talking about.
I've been loving watching John McGinn doing his near cook routine.
Let's talk about England, Scotland. Let's get that out of the way because that's the one with the three Villa players in it. The context of this, I mean, there's a couple of things. First is these group games, when have England ever been good in group games? When have they blown teams away? I mean, there's been some tedious games.
Other than Panama, who were probably one of the worst teams you've ever played in a tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that Trinidad and Tobago game in the World Cup. Yeah.
Dreadful.
I remember I was in Berlin for that World Cup, and I remember that game after watching the first 10 minutes. I was staying in Berlin for about a month, and I'd bought a bike, like an old bike. It looked like a bloody Second World War bike or something. And after watching 10 minutes of that game, I went out into the garden and started fixing it and doing some maintenance on it. That's how exciting England normally are in the group stages. So let's not get overboard and... If there was Halloween, they'd be burning effigies of Gareth Southgate already. And 4 points on the board, he's actually qualified. And, you know, England haven't conceded a goal yet. I mean, yes, it wasn't that great. But another thing, a bit of context, Scotland are actually better than you think. I watched that game against the Czech Republic and I thought they were all right. They were just a bit too eager and a little bit naive. And, opening like half an hour, 45 minutes against the Czechs, they were all over them. They were just a bit too, as I said, too eager in terms of some of their, you know, decision making and, you know, when they were taking their shots, as they found out later on when that chap, you know, tried a speculative shot, even though there was a few Czech chaps in front of him, got blocked and then within seconds was in there, whipped from the halfway line into the back of the net on the other end. But I thought, yeah, Scotland aren't going to be a pushover here. I mean, when it came to team selection, the only change was the change of fullbacks. I thought that was a little bit odd. I thought maybe Trippier would be switched, but the idea is the most thing you want settled any department in your team is your defence, surely. You want your back four drilled, settled, and in. And I think Mings and Stones works well. If you went for Walker in the first game, I don't understand why you wouldn't go for him in the second game if he is your right back.
Considering you won and kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, that was a bit bizarre. I mean, yeah, in the third game, you know, if we'd won this game against Scotland, then, you know, then by all means, if you really want to. But I'd have kept the same back four from, you know, through the group stages, really.
Yeah, but if you're changing like the defense, you picture that it's a change of plan because they're two different kinds of players. So you'd expect changes further up the pitch to sort of work in tandem with those changes at the back. But there wasn't any changes. It was just like two players slotted in, and the two fullbacks didn't really add anything. I barely remember them doing anything in the game.
Was this because he thought the fullbacks would get up a bit more? But you know, all of England fullbacks can, you know, they can attack, can't they?
That's probably what they're better at, if anything.
Yeah, they're all fit for purpose. I didn't quite understand that. In terms of other end of the pitch, I didn't expect Grealish to start at all.
But we all did say before that we thought he would play in this game.
Yeah, exactly. We thought he would come on, and that, you know, that happened. But I mean, let's get into the game. I mean, the first half, I was thinking, and this is almost like a flashback to bloody 1996. Feels exactly the same. Both teams, you know, chances. England reasonably in control, but Scotland, I think they probably had a bit more of a shout in this game than the 96 game, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then you're just thinking, well, second half, this should play out like 96 did. And England, you know, like let's say from about 60th minute, should really take control here. But I think man for man, you know, Scotland were playing, they're probably a better team, to be honest, than the 96 version. And England were struggling. Against Croatia, Phillips played higher up. And I think that was maybe because they knew Croatia was, let's say, an aging midfield. In this game, you thought, well, Phillips would be essential to kind of give us a foothold here. But I didn't see our midfield really controlling this game to the extent that I was expecting.
No, I mean, McGinn, McTominay, the young lad Gilmore, they did really well. They were a unit.
Yeah.
And we couldn't control the tempo of the game that we wanted to. I think we just lacked energy all over the field for whatever reason that is, I don't know. But the Scots had that thing when you could hear other pundits talking about it. The Scots treated it like a derby game and were snapping at England. And then when they got the ball, they had a little bit of bravery to go, actually, we might as well have a go here. You saw that in the first, was it 5 minutes when you had the Chadhams chance? Nice little interchange by the corner flag. Pulls it back. Chadhams has the chance and it's blocked by, I think it was Stones, wasn't it? They had a little bit of quality. I mean, I don't think Scotland are a brilliant footballing team, but what they had was a bit of belief that they had a plan and they were going to go for it. And they had enough chances to suggest that when we get the opportunity to have a go at England, we're going to, but we're not going to be gung-ho. And we'll kind of hold England at arm's length and we'll pick our moment to go. And they kind of did that really well, I thought. And England just frustrated England because England didn't have the quality almost to actually force the issue. And when we never invited Scotland on to, you know, we're best when we're playing behind teams. Scotland sat deep and we didn't have an answer. That was a very much a tactical victory for 90 minutes for Steve Clarke over Southgate. Southgate did not have an answer.
Yeah, Scotland, I think against the Czechs, when they were like knocking on the door in the first half hour of that game, if they'd scored then, I think they would have got a positive result out of that game. So it was easy to dismiss them as like the, you know, the fourth best team just because they got beat by the Czechs. I thought the Czechs were a strong team. They held off Scotland and then they were clinical. But here, so, you know, going into it, I thought if England don't get a grasp of this game, then they may struggle to get, you know, real traction. Yeah. And I look at this England team and there's a lot of young attacking talent in it. But are these players at their respective clubs, like are they the icing on the cake kind of players? Are they really the reason those teams do really well? Or are they, you know, like Foden, how many games did he play? Great, talented player, but he's not De Bruyne, is he? He's not winning you the title for City. And I'm thinking, are they just a bit too, I don't know, lightweight? Because you're relying on Phillips to do to be your muscle in midfield. And unless you've got the ball and you're zipping it around and there's movement, and there was no movement, there was no guile. And with those kind of, you know, the talent we've got to have guile and movement, or else we're sitting duck.
Yeah, I just think with that side, you mentioned Foden. Foden is part of a well-oiled machine at City, isn't he? And they get the best out of him in their system, and it works brilliant. And you saw that all season; he was fantastic for them. Grealish at Villa, you know, when Jack's at his best, it's when the team is built around him to get the best out of him. I don't think Southgate has that side set up to get the best out of the best players. You know, there's a lot of call for like Kane to be dropped, which I don't agree with personally. I still think if you get the ball in the right areas for him, he's going to score you goals. But I just think he doesn't have his combinations, and we haven't seen that over a while because, of course, every England friendly and qualifier, it's a different team. I mean, I couldn't tell you what England's best team is. I don't even think Southgate could.
Well, if you play Kane, you need somebody closer to him yeah, to kind of work with him. And I think go back a tournament or two with these younger players, there was so much pace in the team. The path to success was just to counterattack with blistering speed. And they still have that potential if they play one of the big boys, where we're going to have to soak up pressure if we can withstand it. And, you know, the good news is Mings is playing well and they've kept two clean sheets. So it gives them a chance. But in terms of taking games to teams. I, what's in that midfield really to really get a, like Grealish came on it. You know, everybody was talking about Grealish. Get him on. I mean, this is the interesting thing about Grealish. 3 months ago before his injury, but you know, 4 months if you include the last couple of weeks, he was like being spoken of yeah, he needs to be in the squad. That was about it, wasn't it? There wasn't like mainstream ITV, BBC, they weren't talking about him. Now it's like what happened in 3 months? He hasn't played a game, but his stock has gone right through the roof.
It's like the saviour.
And now every, you know, in the first half, Grealish, this, Grealish, that. My friend in Holland was saying, all they're speaking about on Dutch TV is Grealish. And I'm like, yeah, it's like he hasn't actually played for 3 months for Villa. You know, played a couple of, made a couple of starts at the end of the season. But in that 3 months, he's suddenly now England's saviour. And the only time nobody spoke about Grealish was when actually when he was on the pitch. And you thought, what's he meant to be doing here? They haven't got a system for him. They haven't got a system for Kane. They haven't got a system or Foden. It's like there's no real cohesive setup. I thought against Croatia, as we said in the previous podcast, it was a controlled, comfortable win. But there was potential there for, watching Croatia against the Czechs. We could have gone out and put them to the wall, really, because Croatia only woke up in that Czech game in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that happened whenever Grealish came on, just lead into it. I mean, the chance Shea Adams had at the end, Grealish was the one that was sliding in to put him off at the back post. I mean, what's he doing there? And again, when he got fouled by O'Donnell, he was in his own half. I mean, we've had that problem at Villa before. I mean, Grealish shouldn't be picking up the ball in his own half. I mean, he had to do it at Villa at times because the players around him weren't good enough. I mean, in that England team, he shouldn't be picking the ball up, you know, in his own half to start things. It's just like, what is the plan? Is it get him into a position that he can do damage, or does he have to actually go and get the ball and try and do damage himself because nobody knows what they're doing?
Yeah, I agree. It looks like with Jack, and same with Foden, you've got these players who have shown through the season they've got the ability to have these moments of genius. But in an international tournament against a very well-organised back four, your tactic can't be pass to Jack, pass to Phil Foden, and then just rely on them to make something happen. You actually have to have a system to, you know, get the best out of one or other or both of those players.
There's got to be a movement.
And you've got to move the ball quickly. You know, I think most people are pretty confident of Jack. If you get him one-on-one with anyone, you're going to fancy him. The same with Sterling, really. We don't get Sterling one-on-one with his fullback very often. That's actually not Foden's game. He's not a get his head down, get to the ball and deliver. That's a Sancho move. Foden is silky. He wants to play off people. He wants little, you know, pop passing around the penalty area and really intricate interplay. They're not doing that. It's kind of like, I don't see what our plan is to get the best out of our best players. That's the big concern. I think he's actually defensively, we look relatively organised. I've seen a few people talking about how do we actually connect the front to the back in terms of either Phillips has to go or Rice has to go, or you have to move Mount deeper and give him license to drive forward with the ball. Because at the moment, it seems like we've got a solid back four that, to be fair, you can put anybody at fullback and they're all good players. Yeah. The keeper looks relatively solid. I actually thought he was probably our best player on the night. We haven't mentioned that yet, but Pickford made a really good save in the first half.
Yeah, I would say Pickford and Mings were probably the guys that just, you know, held it together for England to make sure they didn't lose that game.
Yeah, so we've kind of got like a relatively solid, you know, six that we can put behind the ball. But it's the combination further forward. It's just not there.
I thought Phillips would be playing higher up like he did against Croatia.
He's got the engine to do it, hasn't he? He can get up and down.
So I was thinking, do you sacrifice Rice and just have Phillips playing a bit deeper and, you know, playing more, let's say, number eight rather than just covering the back four?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about the Scottish midfield trio that we mentioned before, I mean, McTominay, McGinn and Gilmore. I mean, there's variety there. The three of them are different, very different players. I mean, you've Rice and Phillips, not a lot of variety between them. I mean, Phillips could be, I think Rice could probably play that sort of forward role as well. I've seen him score goals and run things for West Ham. It's just they're basically being asked to play the same position.
Yeah, because, you know, in isolation, the result, you could have won, you know, we could have sneaked a goal at the end 1-0 and everybody's, you know, hunky-dory, but the result's not that important because it's more like you just saw the limitations and the lack of, let's say, potential here. I mean, that's the worrying concern.
We were just poor.
Because, you know, you look at France and Hungary, you know, draw. You know, nobody's shitting their pants there because they know the French have got quality that they can turn it on if they want to.
And they've already shown it as well, to be fair. They've shown flashes of quality. England haven't.
And that's the big thing. Like Belgium, I mean, if you're looking at the par of how I thought Belgium would do, they're below the par that I was expecting because their defense all over the fucking shop. There's weakness there. But when they were struggling, make a couple of substitutes, De Bruyne comes on, bing, bang, bosh. They know it's there in the tank. England haven't showed evidence of those gears yet.
No, I'd agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, but in looking forward, it could be a blessing in disguise, because if John Stones had took that early chance, which I don't know what he was doing with the header that hit the post, I mean, he was trying to make it far too complicated, or the one that Sterling put through the legs and Mason Mount side-footed it wide from 6 yards, any of those two early chances go in and England win 1 or 2-0, I mean, these problems might not be highlighted to be allowed to be resolved. Everybody might just think things are moving along nicely. So
yeah,
it is a chance to get things sorted before getting into the tougher games.
But yeah, it's not like I think it would be wrong to have a go at any of these players, from Kane to, you know, Sterling.
It's not an individual player issue, this. It's a collective, it's a system, it's a tactical thing. It does lay with Southgate, because you can't say he's not been given the tools. And frankly, this is probably one of the first... I mean, you take the Maguire injury out of the equation, which is not ideal, but we haven't lost like a real talisman, I wouldn't have said, in Maguire. You know, in previous, you know, in big tournaments, you know, we've had like, you know, Owen, Beckham, Rooney. We haven't had like, you know, imagine if Kane had done the pre-tournament metatarsal.
Well, as I said on the last show, I'm still not convinced with Kane at major tournaments. But you just mentioned talismans there. I don't think we've got a talisman in midfield. We've got all these super icing on the cake talented players, but we haven't got a proven, tested talisman midfielder. And that is, you know, Mings, I watched an interview with him today. It's, you know, quite good, from the England camp. And he's, you know, he said, I'm 28, I feel really old in, you know, both the Villa squad and this England squad. And I thought, yeah, that is the thing. There's not, you really want the exuberance of youth to get you through, because that's pretty much all you've got. But when you say exuberance of youth, and then you look at the talented players that we've got, you're expecting movement, you're expecting guile, you know, pop, pop, pop all over the shop, players running in from all kinds of angles, and shots on target, goals galore, not three shots on target over, is it 2 games now?
Yeah.
And we're not playing to the only strength we have with all this exuberance of youth and, you know, talent. And we haven't got your Scholeses, we haven't got your Lampards, we haven't got a Beckham.
No, it looks like the players are, it's not right to say, but it looks like they're playing what they want to do to please the manager, rather than what they think is the right thing to do themselves, which is
just playing with the shackles on, I think.
Yeah, it is.
The Scotland game especially, I think the Croatia one, I think they would get a pass, because I think the first game you just got to get your points on the board, get the win, and they did it very professionally. The Scotland game, it's a bit more like you want to see a little bit more, and actually you saw a bit less, and they looked nervous.
Because, you know, 1996, England weren't blitzing that game by any shape or form.
And if
Scotland had put away that penalty that Seaman saved, then you've suddenly got a different game. And, you know, the inflection of that would have been completely different across, you know, history. As we look back at it as, oh yeah, easy win against the Scots, you know, broke down the resistance. But it wasn't that easy, and it wasn't a complete England performance. We saw that team play in its optimum when they hammered the Dutch.
Yeah.
4-1. And this, you know, it's happened so many times in tournaments where England have struggled, and either the third game, it all comes together. So maybe we'll get that against the Czechs. You know, that, remember against Poland when Lineker scored 3, and, you know, we battered them, as I just mentioned there, the Dutch game. So it sometimes does click. So, but I think against the Czechs, it's an interesting position now, because the Czechs are in pole position. A draw will do them.
And it will probably do us as well.
It'll probably do us, but you know how the English public is. They want to win, and they, you know, they want to finish top. But most of all, I would rather win that game, but absolutely put in a performance where you think, I don't give a shit who we're playing in the next round.
Yeah, I agree. They have to put a marker down at some point, like, you know, the Italians have done.
Yeah, rather than like drawing that game 0-0, and then you're going into that second round with zero momentum. And let's be honest, there's no great team in this tournament. French will come good. So you're going to have to beat them at some stage of the game. Portugal are doing what Portugal do. They never play well. Even when they win the bloody tournament, they don't play that well.
No,
Germany, I'm still not convinced. This is not optimum Germany. I mean, they switched on because they knew, this is fucking Portugal, we can take care of them.
The Dutch are exciting but can't defend.
So many holes in that Dutch team, and it's not clinical. They haven't got a real clinical edge to it. So if England got their shit together. But I don't think I think, as I said, icing on the cake players. I don't see players that produce.
All our big players need to be, well, tactically, we need to get them in the right positions where they can hurt the opposition. And then when they get there, they've got to, it's that final ball, final pass, shot, whatever. You know, it's fine margins.
Because this tournament is crying out for Grealish. If he's getting the ball on the edge of the 18-yard box, he's going to cause...
running at people.
He's going to cause them all kinds of bloody problems. And it's... Yeah.
Same as Sancho, to be fair. Same as Foden. We've got the players.
Any final words on England? I've seen too many bloody tournaments to get excited and start crying about this one, because you're just going to get through the tournament and they're in a decent position.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I would say is if England were a stock or a share, you would buy now because they're in the dip, but they're going to rise again whenever that they could get through to the next round. I mean, it's crazy it's like a roller coaster. Playing against Croatia and winning 1-0, you know, everyone's optimism through the roof. 0-0 against Scotland with a performance that wasn't much worse and definitely wasn't any better, and everybody's on the floor and people selling their England shirts and everything else. Now it's still only two games.
Yeah.
I still don't think, though, frankly, even being measured, I still don't think we're a particularly great side. I think we've got some brilliant individuals. I don't think as a collective unit, though, I don't think we're there personally.
We haven't got that midfielder that kind of links it together. And it's kind of, it's a collection of players and not a team, is it?
You just need to stumble upon the right performance and the right formation and it could just click. And that's what international tournaments are.
I can still see England playing like, let's say, one of the big boys, being under the cosh and catching the other team on the break two or three times and, you know, winning that game. Because that's how...
I think that suits us, to be honest. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Team opening up against us. We want space to play, and all our top players like Jack, like Foden, like Kane, Sterling, there's an endless list. They all want to, like, either run in behind, they want space to play, and they want to play in little pockets. They're not getting it at the moment because teams like Scotland are... I'm not going to be as disrespectful to say parking the bus, but they've got a plan to negate England.
Yeah, I think England would struggle against Wales, would struggle against...
see it in qualifiers sometimes. You see it in friendlies. Teams sit deep against us and go, all right, come on then. And that's why watching England, a lot of the time, especially at home, is boring as sin.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about England. We'll see how they get.
Definitely. That's enough of England.
It always comes alive in the second round onwards when you start to get into it. But we just need a performance against the Czechs. Just to show us. But I don't think there's a real team there. That is the problem. Speaking of real teams, certainly in spirit, Wales have managed to traverse through the group in second place. And
they've done well.
Decent display against Italy as well. Even though Italy were resting players, they're still they've got a decent enough squad that there's players that want to make an impression.
Yep.
And, they went down to 10 men. Bale actually had a chance. It could have been a draw.
He's missed some bad ones, hasn't he?
He's had a mare, isn't he?
Shocker, isn't he?
I mean, great ball to Ramsey for the win against Turkey, but...
And what a disappointment Turkey have been, by the way. Everyone was sort of tipping them to be like, really, they're always technically good players, but they've looked awful.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to do something because you just look through that team and then you just remember, well, these aren't minnows. They've got to the World Cup semis not so long ago. And you look across that team and you go, this is actually a talented crop, but they're just being
useless. They're just young, aren't they? They look a bit young and naive and lacking experience.
Well, I wouldn't call them naive. I just useless.
They've let in 8 goals in 3 games. I mean, your guy Suyanchu, the place for Leicester. I mean, he's usually like knocking on the door of the Premier League team of the season, and in this tournament, he's just been awful.
Yeah. I mean, he's not as bad as Denier of Belgium. I think he's in because of an injury, but he was all over the place against Denmark. And Denmark, if they actually had some let's say top quality strikers, they'd have seen off Belgium there. They were all over them in the first half. So Belgium don't look... I mean, they've got some aces up their sleeve, but I would go for France over Belgium again.
I just think the French have got the firepower and a bit of know-how, and they're all just about the right age where they've got a little bit of tournament experience. They're a unit that have played together a lot.
They won the World Cup as well.
Yeah, that's when they won it together. This isn't a new team. You look at the number of new players in this England squad in comparison from 2018. To now, there's not, there's a few from the World Cup, but there's not like the core of the squad.
I thought that was a young team. I thought There would be evolution, but it's almost like we're starting again.
They've all dropped off, haven't they? Those players, you look at like players who were big in that tournament, Lingard, etc.
It's almost like we're starting again when this should be really a team that is 3 years, you know, more experience and you know, ready to go. It's almost like we are starting again. It is a bit weird. So before we disappear, any other team? I mean, Italy, I think, look good. I think they look good.
Yeah, they look better than I thought they'd be.
But they might be one of these teams who have a great group stage and then they just get hammered in the second round straight away.
It'll be interesting with a lot of these teams who've been playing at home. You know, Italy have had all home games, England have, Holland have. When teams have to start travelling, how they actually manage to, you know, play on the road and don't have their sort of their comfort blanket. I actually think, for one, with England, it might actually help us travelling. It might actually focus us a bit more.
Yeah, Spain.
It ain't vintage Spain, is it? Let's be fair. Jeez.
I mean, Poland realised finally that...
Nice of Lewandowski to finally turn up at a tournament as well.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, Poland, you know, like to watch the Poles in these tournaments, but always disappointing. And in this game, you just thought, oh, come on. And then, he finally arrives.
Great header.
And you're thinking, well, you shouldn't have got beat by Slovakia, but there's a real opportunity because I think Sweden are a workman team. But you can see Poland beating Sweden if they actually decide they want to go through.
It looks actually a pretty weak group, that one, I would have said. Because this is not a vintage Spain team by a long way. This is more like sort of mid-90s Spain for me.
If Spain had a striker,
Yeah, and when Slovakia beat Poland, I thought, oh, maybe there's something about this Slovakian team. But, you know, against Sweden, they were dog awful. So whoever's going to play any of these teams in the second round, there's nothing really to be scared of, is there?
No.
But, you know, we've seen it before. Teams, you know, Portugal being absolutely awful, winning the Euros. Three draws in their group stages.
Yeah.
1990, was it Argentina after the 86 win? They got to the final again where they got beat 1-0 by Germany. They were awful.
Then you have the Greeks in 2004 again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you ended up with like a France-Germany final. You know, the two teams that play each other in like the opening game, sort of both of them make it all the way through to the final, like Portugal and Greece did that time. And
yeah, but the opening game was Turkey.
Oh, no, but I just meant the opening game of the group.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think Holland are going to go deep. I just don't think they've got that cutting edge.
Statistically, it's the teams that can be a bit pragmatic sometimes that generally tend to do well in tournament football, which
is why I got a little bit, I got a warm feeling about England against Croatia. I thought this is a typical performance of a team that actually, you know, as you say, pragmatic, that ends up winning. We've got all these like super...
In the knockout rounds when it's just about getting the job done by any means.
Because I was thinking, yeah, we've got all these superstar young attacking players, but I was just thinking, I don't think they're going to win us the tournament though. It's being solid, you know, having an element of shithousery. And just having that one man who, gets six goals in the tournament, that normally does the job. And at this moment in time, I mean, I think that England's two clean sheets is kind of a plus in that respect. When I compare them to Holland, I think maybe England need to be involved in a real firefight and to get the attacking players to, you know, raise their game and actually think, fuck this, let's do this. Rather than trying to play some kind of system that's not obviously working because... I think Southgate's maybe trying to be purposely pragmatic to try to win the tournament in the end, when that might not be the way to go, because I don't think we've got the personnel to be pragmatic. I mean, who in midfield is being pragmatic? Like probably Rice, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you know, ultimately, we haven't our defence has been solid, but I wouldn't have said we've been massively tested yet.
No, we haven't been tested with any like guile yet, have we?
No.
Scotland was... pretty much what, you know, Mings and Stones has been used to, you know, playing in the Premier League.
I mean, my overall view on the tournament is it hasn't really changed. I'm still, you know, trying, you know, tirelessly to really get into it and be really enthusiastic, but I'm just not there at the moment. Yeah, it hasn't sparked into life for me yet.
And well, I'm going to be there at the weekend. I'm off to Budapest.
With your Dutchie friends.
I'm off to Budapest to watch Holland play whoever finishes third in groups D, E or F. Because of the format that it's spread all over Europe, you don't really get that in...
It just lacks the identity of one country.
Yeah, which we mentioned on the last show. So there's that missing. But, you know, like anything, once you get deep into the knockout rounds, then it will capture some of its expected glory.
I hope so.
But there isn't a big plethora of... There's more teams, but there's less with any, you know, real, the big hitters aren't looking impressive. And even France, you know, fell to Hungary, and fair play to Hungary, because that was, it's like a proper game. You got the full stadium, and that's why I'm going to the Budapest. But you had a team that actually, you know, were buoyed on by the crowd and believed they could get something from that game. I like that celebration, actually, when he smashed that desk up, and that woman was like,
that's a brilliant scene.
Don't forget to follow the show on whatever podcast app that you listen to, whether it be Spotify, Apple, Pocket Cast, etc., etc. Also go to freetrade.io/moms to get your free share as well by signing up to their app that allows you to build your portfolio in the simplest, no-nonsense way.
But anyway, we look forward to the conclusion of the group stages. And by the time you hear from us again, we will be underway in the second round. And who knows, Villa may even have signed another player. But so far, so good in the transfer window.
They've moved quickly. Yep. It's good.
So all good in the hood at Villa Park. And I will be talking to Mr. Purslow, actually, in the fan consultation group meeting this week. So in the next show, we will have some insights from that as well. So until then, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.